Hey friends, Ashton here. Welcome back to another episode of Good, True, and Beautiful. I'm excited today because, you know, there's people that I see from afar for a long, long time. And I think we have this mutual understanding that we're kind of friends because we're in a circle of friends, but we've actually never met before. And today's a day where I got to meet one of those friends. And so it's official now. The interesting thing is we share a last name. Now, y'all know I say Gustafsson. The rest of the world, though, they say Gustafsson. And tomato, tomato, we're going to see where this goes today. But joining us from Nashville, Tennessee, is Katie Gustafsson. And I'm so excited to introduce her to our community and our tribe here. And with that being said, super grateful today to enjoy some time with Katie Gustafsson. Katie, welcome.
Oh, thank you, Ashton. I know, it's such a treat. I've been wanting to connect with you for so long. I love what you do. And as I was just describing, it's so lovely to not have to explain my last name to you. And I love the fact that you have this like gusto, literally, in your pronunciation of Gustafsson.
There you go.
It's so funny because I think people want to say it that way. People have called me so many different things, right? And trying to pronounce that last name, which is not Southern. And I think people always kind of want to go that route, like really put that, you know, that gusto in there.
That's right. Yeah. Gustafsson. We've heard it all.
Oh, totally. I always liken it to when people are like, how do you say your last name? I say, well, it's like a gust of wind, but it's Gustafsson.
There you go.
Just you know, cut and paste.
I love it. Haven't heard that one before. I'll have to add that to the repertoire. So I begin every conversation, especially when a new voice joins us, because I'm getting to know you in real time. When you introduce yourself and your work in the world, where do you begin?
What a great question. You know, in this season of my life, I always start by saying that I'm a mom. And there's a reason for that, because I have a 4-year-old son named Tucker, and for 3 of his 4 years of life, I was in the midst of cancer treatment, and so did not really get to feel super present as a mom, and it felt kind of like survival mode. And so this last year of being on the other side of all that, I've got to really connect to that mom role in a new way, which is so, so wonderful and joyful and fun. So I'm a mom, a wife. I am a psychotherapist. I've been in private practice here in Nashville for about 15 years. And I'm an Enneagram coach. I work with a lot of kind of executives, corporate teams, and I love writing. I consider that kind of part of who I am. It's that thing that I've always done that I don't think I'm in a very healthy place when I'm not writing. So it's just kind of one of those parts of who I am, and like an extension almost, whether that's music or blogs or working on a book right now. That's kind of me.
Love it. Sounds like we do have a lot in common, especially the four wing that I have. I'm sure we could, we'll try to tame and tune down the metaphors today, that we don't get too lost in them for everybody. So what spurred today's conversation was some of your writing. And I'm on your email list, and I got this email called The Loving Practice of Detachment. And then, of course, you had Eckhart Tolle as a quote that was in there. And I was like, this is it. This is the stars have aligned. It's time for Katie and I to get connected. And so anybody that wants to begin that dialogue through the lens of Eckhart Tolle, I'm all in. And so really, I just wanted to lean into your expertise in this really big conversation, because as I have, as we've all hopefully at least started some of our soul work and how we see the world, I think this idea of detachment, which is simultaneously a conversation about attachment, is not very well understood. And so what I want to do today is like detachment 101 with Katie Gustafson. Maybe that's what today is. We're calling the podcast in real time what it is. So if you're cool, let's walk down that road today. Does that work?
Yeah, let's do it.
So where should we begin with this idea of detachment? Because I think out of the gate, sometimes when people hear this word, there's almost like I'm kind of offended that you would tell me to detach. I'm very involved in this situation and I can't detach, or maybe their expectations are a little too high or a little on the line. How do you begin? Help me maybe through the lens of, counseling or the science of this. Where do we start when we start with this topic of detachment?
Well, it's like, I think kind of what I wrote about, in that newsletter, I think loving detachment is a byproduct of the soul work we do in working on our own codependency in life, in relationships. So I think, you know, it starts with kind of this, you know, like we are human beings. We're wired for survival. We're needy. We're wired for connection and relationship from day one. You know, like we don't get very far in life without the nurturing and protection of the people in our lives that are around us. And so I think we are also wired to feel like we are accepted and belong. I think that's just at the heart of human beings. You know, it's like we all have this deep, deep, deep longing to belong and to feel connected. And so that's where it gets really tricky, you know, as we do form relationships. I think when we talk about detachment, we're obviously talking about relationships. Yep. We're talking about kind of relationship dynamics. And I think you're absolutely right. People tend to kind of think negatively of this word detachment. And I think it can definitely be used in a negative sense. That's why I like to preface it with the word loving detachment, because I do believe, you know, sometimes in relationship when, you know, when we are codependent, which, and by that I just mean kind of we are getting our internal needs of kind of acceptance and belonging based on what other people think about who we are, you know, what other people's judgments are, how other people experience us. When we lean too heavily into this need to feel self-worth because of what you think of me, I think that's where it gets tricky, right? That's where we do kind of slide into that codependency. And, you know, I think, you know, bringing the Enneagram into this, I think certain Enneagram types, certain personality types kind of tend towards that brand of codependency a little bit easier than others. And so I think when we start to talk about detachment and loving detachment, we have to talk about codependency and we have to talk about boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how do you differentiate between maybe, could we call it natural neediness That's hard for me to say, but maybe that's where we're going here. Natural neediness and unhealthy codependency, right? Like, where is that? Where is that fine line there?
I think it's the difference between asking ourselves, am I running away from something or am I running towards something, right? So is there a need that I have, a felt need? Because that is our birthright as human beings as well, is we have this ability, this right to have needs and desires and get those met, to ask for what we need and desire from other people. You know, I think it's, is it based in a true desire or is it based in, you know, scarcity and fear?
Yeah.
Are we running away from our own sense of wholeness and worth, or are we just running towards what true connected, healthy relationship looks like? And I guess it's subtle, you know, it's kind of hard to navigate. But I think there is a stark difference between having a true need and asking for help. Like, if I'm feeling really sad or lonely, you know, it's so good for me to identify that so that I can reach out to somebody who feels safe, and trusted and ask for help, you know, ask, to go for a walk and, or go get a coffee or whatever that looks like. But I think it becomes, manipulative, right? When we're trying to, like when we get into the controlling stuff, when we're trying to maneuver or engineer something that's based out of a lack of security in who we are.
So you're saying that people can manufacture drama for the sake of having attention? Is that what you're saying?
1000%. Yes. I know I have, you know, it's like, it's so easy. I mean, I think about, you know, this is a good example to kind of put skin on it. Like when I'm feeling insecure, when I'm not, you know, as a four, well, we won't get into the weeds of Enneagram right now, but when I get insecure and I'm not practicing self-care, I'm not doing my own soul work. I love how you say that. When I'm not doing all the things, I kind of lean into this kind of codependent style of trying to, you know, I'll really struggle to have just a direct, honest conversation with somebody. And let's say I get a weird feel from that person, but I spoke my truth. After that, I kind of try to kind of smooth everything over really well, kind of go back and check in on them, make sure they're doing okay. And, you know, instead of just having the hard conversation, you know, it's kind of manufacturing this sense of like, are you sure you still like me? You know, are we okay? You know, it's that feeling that, you know, I can't show up and use my voice and ask for what I need. And with, you know, I can't just leave it there. I have to kind of do the after exhausting work of kind of trying to play God and control the situation.
Yeah. Yeah. How much, and this is a counseling question. How often is it a case of mistaken identity? Or let me say this another way. People just don't know who they are. They just haven't taken the time to say, this is who I am, and this is what I value, this is what makes me tick. And in a peaceful, benevolent, not in a way to defend, but just like, this is who I am. And I think if we haven't done that work to say, hey, this is who I am, this is my truth, this is what I value, then we will go out on that search for acceptance. We will go, we will go out for other people to either affirm or not affirm. We try to get some of these outside voices, and it kind of comes back to this idea of it's an inside job, right? And I think that at some point, as you and I are just at the forefront of ushering in this conversation of detachment, as we even get to what is loving detachment, I think a lot of it, as I'm hearing you process this in real time, is you've got to learn who you are. You need to dig in and learn your name before you had a name. And when you can arrive from that place, when that true self emerges in the world, detachment, it just kind of flows. Everything's not on the line all the time. You're not having to, the ego doesn't need to defend and explain and verify. It's just, it is what it is. Is that, am I chasing a rabbit there, or is there some truth there?
No, I think you said that beautifully. I think you're spot on. You know, I think that when we do have weak identities, we look in really curious places to kind of fill those holes. Yep. And, you know, I like to say too, when we forget the truth of who we are, we fall into really crappy patterning, you know, like we make bad choices. And I think it's an identity thing for sure. And, you know, it's also like you said, it's putting the hours in to kind of get to know yourself, you know, because, you know, when I get to work with clients, and they come into the office for all different kind of reasons, but the number one question I want to understand and learn about in their life is how's your relationship with you? Yep. Because if your relationship with you is off, if it's weak, if it's broken, you know, if it's really hurt, it's going to be really tough to heal and bridge healthy relationships with other people. And so the heart of this whole discussion is what you just said. It has everything to do with, you know, I call it kind of finding your me.
Yeah.
We have to do the work of finding our me. And I think, you know, just on a high level, I do think the Enneagram is kind of like one of the best tools we have to not just understand ourselves on a deep, deep level and why we are the way that we are. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh has that quote, the beginning of love is understanding. And so it gives us this deeper understanding of ourself, not just for knowledge sake, but for compassion's sake, so that we can really lean into ourselves. You know, it's that whole idea that it's really hard to be nasty to somebody when you're really close up to them, right? When you get into the story of why somebody is the way that they are, it gives you a new lens to see that person through. It gives you more compassion. Yeah. And I think this is really all about, you know, being able to stand in our identity and our truth and be honest about what we can do and what we can't do in relationship, what's good for us and what's not. And that is, I think, to your point, a whole lot about identity. It's a whole lot about, you know, I like how Brené Brown talks about there's a big difference between belonging and fitting in. Two different things, you know?
Yeah.
We have to first belong to ourselves.
That's right.
To ever belong to a group or a relationship or anything of that nature.
Which is really, really hard. That's hard to sell in a world that is constantly, how many followers are you being retweeted? Have you been mentioned? At mentioned this, like that is now floating in the psyche, right? And I think that you mentioned, how is the relationship with you? How is my relationship with me? when you reemerge from that place in a healthy way, there's confidence, not in a boast, not in an arrogant way, but in a real steadfast, in a grounded way, right? Like you show up grounded in who you are. And you can spot this a mile away in people, right? You know those people that show up in the world. And one of the telltale signs, I always say this, the fruits of the Spirit pour out. So from my tradition, I can affirm, if I see love and peace and patience and kindness in someone, chances are they've been pretty loving, peaceful, and patient and kind with themselves.
Yeah.
It starts there. And from there, it overflows. And that's why I think you and I are sitting here going, hey, look, this is an inside job. It begins here. Don't think you're going to go find it out there and then bring it back. You actually develop it, nurture it, sow the seed here, and then it blooms from within.
Totally.
And now we can talk about how, maybe the word isn't easy, but you're at least a lot more open to the conversation of detachment once that work has been done.
I was just going to say, and then from there, it is
loving detachment.
Yep, totally. You know, it really is, if you bring this back to kind of a deep spiritual faith, that God is God. God is who he says he is, right? And I don't have to try to be God. Like, I think that's what I love about, you know, I mean, there's so much written about 12 steps and codependency and all of these different really helpful tools and practices and programs, you know, and at the heart of that, I think is, you know, it's allowing for something like, I don't have to play God in all my relationships.
Yep.
I don't have to control. I don't have to manipulate. I can open up. And I think that to me, if I could like put like sign language around this idea of detachment, it would be just kind of like opening up, like releasing that need to control in relationship, releasing that need for that person to like me and want to hang out with me and think good things about me. You know, it's like, it's saying, you know what? It's none of my business.
Yeah.
What, you know, that person's opinion is none of my business. And I know who I am. I know who God is. And, you know, I'm going to let them have their process. I'm not going to try to engineer something, manipulate something to work in a relationship. I'm going to lovingly detach. I'm going to come back to myself and I'm going to let God be God. And I'm going to let that other person have their own process and do their own work.
Yeah. So loving detachment in that sense, you're saying is knowing that you can't control everything, knowing that you can't be the Wizard of Oz behind the curtains, pulling the string on everything that's happening out there.
Right. True. And that, I think that back to your initial question is really, that's kind of the litmus test, right? Like, am I manipulating out of fear that I'm not enough and I need this person, or I need to do this so that this will work out? Am I manipulating out of fear, or am I reaching out from a place of desire?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
True, honest, healthy desire.
Yeah.
And
abundance, right? This is a scarcity. It's a scarcity abundance conversation.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, yeah, it is, because it's having to kind of let go. I mean, it's letting go at the core of loving detachment. It's really letting go. It's not being mean, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I have grown up my whole life in the South, and we're supposed to be nice, you know, like really nice and not hurt people's feelings. And, you know, And that's the thing, you know, if we are living life in alignment with the truth of who we are, and if we have healthy boundaries in our lives, we will inevitably hurt people along the way. Right? By me saying, no, I can't do that, that could hurt somebody's feelings. And that's not, obviously, I love this delineation between these two words, hurt and harm. Like, I don't know, do you sense a difference
Oh
between
yeah.
those two words?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%. Very subtle, but two different
Like,
conversations.
yeah, I feel like when we're trying to harm someone, it feels really like intentional and almost malicious. Like but I mean, we will hurt people that we love inevitably in life. And I think it comes back to, again, like the heart of it is loving. It's loving detachment. It's not, we're not trying to suck on purpose, right? We're being true to who we are and what we need. And sometimes that can feel hurtful to other people.
Yeah, totally. You know, the Tolle quote that you began that piece with, sometimes letting go is an act far greater of a far greater power than hanging on. I think at the core of what you and I are talking about here is surrender, you know, detachment, surrender and letting go.
Yeah, totally.
Those words, the ego just can't hear that. When the ego hears, you just need to let go, you just need to surrender. He or she is in such a fight for its life,
Yeah.
right? That it's like, no, you don't tell me that.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe that's a good test for us is if you're hearing surrender and let go and loving detachment, and you feel like it's inviting you to something, you're probably in your true self. If
Yeah.
you hear surrender, let go, loving detachment, and you feel threatened, it's probably the ego that's got its ears on at the moment. And
That's
so I
really good.
and so I think that's helpful, just hearing you process in real time the litmus test for all of us in our lives as we navigate business, relationships, parenting. Who's doing the listening, right? And when it's you and your true self, you know in your cells at the cellular level that this is a way, this is the narrow path towards a life of love and peace and kindness.
Yeah, so beautifully said. I love that. And, you know, it's that ego, it's that, it's that's the adaptive child that we all have. That, you know, I mean, I have a 4-year-old, and you better believe that his little adaptive strategies are in full force. And because he doesn't know any better, right? He thinks he has to do all the things, you know. It's the latest thing is he wants a popsicle like before breakfast, right? He can't trust that, you know, and his little adaptive strategy is to just pitch a fit, like, no, I need this. I'm gonna die without it. Like, that's his thinking. You know, he can't open up to this greater truth that mom knows best, and you're gonna get a bunch of cavities if you eat popsicles for
That's right.
breakfast. You know, it's just that's the adaptive child at work. And a lot of times I think these adaptive strategies that we had to develop as little people in order to get some of our needs met, in order to survive, I think those adaptive strategies are older than, you know, this wise, loving adult that we all have access to, you know, that adaptive strategy is really old. Yep. It's been around for a long time. That ego is really old. So it knows, it's very familiar and can go into action, you know, at the drop of a hat. It does. It's instant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I love your kind of that, the check-in that you did, you know, when you consider like, is this loving detachment? Is this, does this bring me peace?
Yep.
Does this feel like, does this feel expansive or does this feel threatening? I think that's brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah. We can look at, it's kind of two sides of the same coin here. If we say detaching in love or loving detachment, it's really, we're talking about the same thing. And I think it's maybe if loving detachment doesn't ring true, maybe if you heard it detaching in love, that could maybe
right.
invite another, just turning it a little bit to take a spin on it. As you have helped people navigate all sorts of challenge, strife, I'm not a counselor. I can only imagine what you hear all day, every day. what is a practical step? As maybe you hear someone that's processing something to you and you go, I can tell we're a little too attached in some area here. What is like step one of loving detachment? Is there a first step? Maybe I should ask it that way.
I think the awareness piece is always a huge first step. I mean, it sounds so obvious, but what we're talking about is kind of advanced because I think our, just the, our culture, the world that we live in, is so fast that we don't really have a margin to think about this stuff and to kind of study in ourselves what's happening in real time. We just live in such a stressed out, like instant gratification kind of world, especially connected to our devices all the time. And so I really think that the first step, the first practical step is just to notice.
Is it control?
When
is it, are we noticing the reach for control? I mean, is that one of the first big awarenesses?
Yeah, I think it's noticing the patterns, especially in relationships that we have. Noticing, you know, I teach a lot around this idea of self-observation when I teach the Enneagram, and it's this first kind of practical step of using this tool in your life, in relationships. And I think that is kind of, that can be said for this process as well. Waking up to, you know, detaching in love. I think we have to become students of ourselves and notice when we are trying to get internal needs of love and belonging and acceptance met through external sources. When we reach, kind of, it's like, it's noticing the reach. When are we reaching? When am I looking? When am I leaning into this person or this opportunity or, you know, this outcome to fill something inside of me that's broken?
You know,
I think it's just,
you hear the phrase, if it's going to be, it's up to me, something like that. I don't know. It feels very salesy, you know, in the business sales world. This letting go, I don't know who said this. So if you said it and you're listening, please tell me, but it was like, in order for the world to be a world, it has to be free to be a world. And when I heard that, I was like, that may have just saved my life. Because what it, that phrase, in order for the world to be a world, it has to be free to be a world. It, I just realized in that moment, I don't have to have my hands on every button. That really what I just need to do is be grounded in who I am, approach every moment with intentionality, and then from there I let go. I always use the metaphor of a farmer, right? Like, has there ever been a farmer hang on to his seeds? Never.
Oh, that's so good. Yeah.
He lets go.
That's
then they disappear. And then you tell me who's in control after that. I mean, I can't think of a better metaphor for us all to navigate our expectations, our anticipation, our predictions mm-hmm. of where life's going. Hey, I don't know if rain and sun is coming. I don't know if a storm's coming. I'm just going to plant some seeds, and then something interesting and beautiful may bloom from there. That it's not on me.
Yeah. So have you ever read that book, The Four Agreements?
No.
It's by Miguel Ruiz, and it's this really short little book, but it's so good. And the follow-up newsletter to the Loving Detachment one that we're talking about, is all about practicing abundance in relationships. Hmm. And I quoted this Miguel Ruiz, the Four Agreements author. He basically talks about four tenets that if we practice in our lives will make such an incredible impact on just our overall like health and happiness. And these four agreements are: be impeccable with your word, don't take anything personally, don't make assumptions, and always try your best. Hmm. So be impeccable with your word, don't take anything personally, don't make assumptions, and always do your best.
And from there, that's called detachment.
I think it is. That's where I go, because you know, these are the things that I can control.
That's right.
There's a whole lot of world. Like you said, the world has to be free to be a world. Like, I can't have my hand in everything.
Yep.
But these are some pretty powerful things that I can practice in my lane and to really set me up for a connected, really good, true, and beautiful life.
Let's go.
You know, and I think that it's a shift for a lot of people, because so many people think of detachment as such a negative, and it can be a negative.
They hear giving up. They hear giving in, giving up.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. I think it's like, you know, it's like, what is that analogy? It's like, squeezing a baby, like you're like holding on so tight you could like hurt it.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously there are times in our lives when we have to create space in relationship,
mm-hmm.
Emotionally, physically, you name it. And in order to do that, because you know, it's like if you think about a piece of music, and I think we both are, the four in us is very connected to music.
Yeah.
If you think about a piece of music, you know, that song is made so beautiful by the spaces and the rests.
That's right.
It's not constant sound. And I think that's such a good reminder for us in seasons and relationships. You know, it's a really good thing to create space in relationships where there needs to be space in order to let something new grow.
Yep.
Or fall away. You know, I think space in our relationship with ourselves, to take space for ourselves and to take space in relationships is such a good thing. And I think that people, we often see that as, hurtful or negative, when I think it can be a really healing and repair that can happen in relationships.
Yeah. And for maturity and growth, even on the level of physics in the universe, you got to have some space. Things get too close, that growth isn't going to happen. And let's replace growth with flourishing, right? Like sometimes I think growth feels a little too up and to the right, you know, like Excel spreadsheet capital. Like here, I think flourishing may be better, but it's still the same conversation that there needs to be some space and loving detachment. While we are saying it means letting go, that doesn't mean you still can't hold those people and places that you love. It's just not a clinging, right? It's language, right? Show us your language and we'll show you your life. This is what I think you and I are getting at. It's so hard to dance around this conversation and really put your thumb on it, but detachment does not mean removal. It's really just a whole new way of, it's a new way of being within yourself, being in relationship. So yeah, fire away.
Yeah. I love that. It's holding without clinging.
Yeah.
You know, and that's so well said. Here's the thing. It's hard.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to practice this kind of type of detaching in love. It can be really, really hard because it might require some grief.
Especially if clinging has got you what you thought you wanted for a lifetime.
Right. There's some loss. There's some loss that happens, you know?
Yeah.
And yet there's also so much newness. You know, it's kind of like you and I, this is what, we're smack dab in the middle of February. It's winter outside. Doesn't look like much is growing. You know, it's,
we're in the liminal space.
In the liminal space. And sometimes detaching in love can really feel like a winter, but trusting that, by not abandoning yourself, by listening to your truth and doing the right thing, you know, trusting that, you know, God brings things around.
Yeah.
God is God. I am not. I always have to say it to myself, you know?
I love it. I always ask every one of our guests that comes on, at least for the first time, and you can answer it in the tone of loving detachment, or you can take this wherever you want to, but what's some advice you would give to your younger self?
Oh gosh. Let's see. I love that question. Man, I think I would tell her, A, that it's all gonna be all right. But I would also tell her that she can trust herself.
Get to know yourself. And
yeah. I mean, when I think of younger self, the self that needed the most good advice was in her 20s, right? Like, which is a scary time for a lot of people. And I think a time that we often look to relationships to fill the needs, you know, deep, deep inside. And so I think that I would really want her to know that she can really trust herself and her intuition.
Love it. As we wrap this up, where would you invite some of our listeners maybe to go if some of this felt like a conversation they'd like to take a, more of a deep dive into? Any specific books? You mentioned that, was it the four questions, answers? Can't remember what it
was. The Four Agreements.
Four Agreements.
The Four Agreements. No, it's such a good book. Super short read. That's such a good one. You know, there is a book that I recommend clients all the time that really helps. It's like a daily devotional. It's not a Christian devotional, or it's really, I mean, it kind of is spiritual, but it's called The Language of Letting Go. And if this stuff sounds interesting, and if you want to work on kind of this idea of letting go and releasing that kind of death grip on control, this is such a great resource for you. The Language of Letting Go. It's by a woman named Melody Beatty. And then, you know, I would love to hear from them. You know, they can always hop on my website and join my newsletter. I write about this stuff a lot. But yeah, I'd love to connect with anyone who'd like to dig deeper into it.
Your website again, Katie?
It's katiegustafson.co.
.co, right on. And you're on Instagram. I've seen you there too.
Yes, at katiegustafson.co.
And then a shameless plug, you've got these Enneagram dinners that you do.
Oh, yes.
I've seen those.
Oh, they're so fun. I know. So there's a couple different things. I know you're in Texas, but if any of your listeners are in Nashville, I host these, they're Enneagram groups. They're called Enneagram Mastermind groups. And we meet either at lunch or at dinner, and we talk Enneagram. We talk about our stories. We really dig into kind of the deeper kind of constructs within the Enneagram, but we just have so much fun and make friends. And the women, they're all women's groups right now. I'm starting a co-ed group in August, but just a great time to connect to community and connection. And then I have an online program called The Practice, which is a great support network. It's a community, an Enneagram community, and it's all kinds of therapeutic tools, self-care tools for outside the therapy office, that's really based in Enneagram wisdom. And that's called The Practice. You can check that out on my website as well.
Beautiful. Well, I've loved getting to spend some time with you today. I'm glad that we're finally, whatever, Zoom buddies or whatever you want to call this, podcast friends.
Cousins
or something out there. I'm sure that our paths will cross again. You've got a seat here anytime. So if you've got something, something you want to share, bring it our way. And grateful to have you as a voice here within our community.
Thank you so much. This has been such a treat.
You bet. We'll have you back soon.
All right. Sounds good.